Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
I'm over here in my wife's shoe collection. I'm trying to find the pointiest shoes in there. And you know what? Nothing is over a couple centimeters. I'm saddened.
Well, I'll be a pumped up Reebok. Matt Frederick, you've returned for part two of our story on Krakow, the weird pointy shoes of medieval Europe.
Look at that. Yep. I'm here. I'm here. That's it.
Okay. Now for everyone who hasn't somehow listened to part one, please do check it out. It's a lot of fun. We skirted with a little bit of danger there at the end, Matt, but we got away clean, as we have often in the past, knock on wood. And right now, wanted to check in with you before we move to part two. How you feeling about the weird history of these weird shoes?
Oh, man, I am feeling, you know what, really optimistic that there's even more ridiculous stuff that we're about to talk about today. I've consumed an entire 48 fluid ounces of Khalifa cold brew, and I am feeling ready to rock.
Then, without further ado, thanks to our super producers, Casey Pegram, guest producers, Andrew Howard and Max Williams, away we go, part two of weirdly pointy shoes. These shoes, these Poulains, they're not seen as a fad. They're seen as a symbol, a way of communicating that one is doing well in the world. So it's funny because they may have also been a form of like a predecessor of what's called retail therapy today. According to some historians, medieval fashion at the time was largely known for its clean lines and this kind of chaste minimalism. So maybe, and again, this is speculation, maybe a good explanation for this flamboyance is that the shoes emerged onto the scene very shortly after the Black Death killed like 30, maybe 60% of the European population. So you've survived. You've made it out.
Yeah, now you can wear these things around and be a bit frivolous because life is short. No, but that totally makes sense psychologically why something that's a little perhaps stranger to the everyday person would be just more accepted. And it really makes me think about the fashion trends that are going to be coming out in the next couple of years across the world right now.
Right. I hope masks stay around. Masks are awesome.
I think they will. I was actually perusing LED types of masks, and I was even looking at gauntlets. There are some incredible Etsy cyberpunk gauntlets that you can just buy. And you know, you could, it's everyday use stuff. I always think, oh, maybe that's a Dragon Con thing, but Dragon Con's not going to be a thing anymore, or Comic Con or any of these things. They just don't exist anymore, but I can wear a gauntlet at home.
Yeah, bro. You got to be the Dragon Con you wish to see in the world. I think that's Gandhi. Or it was a guy dressed as Gandhi at Dragon Con. You told me that.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. I think I met him too.
I think we did. He's a friend of the show. So we know that there is a cultural context from which this popularity may have arisen, but it kept its controversy as it continued. You know, it's something that's often, it's considered like the first, the domain of the elite, but then the church begins to attack it. Remember we said they called them devil's fingers. Mm-hmm. They said that these pointy shoes, the Poulain, was encouraging what they called, they meant a different thing by this, but what they called sodomy. Sodomy was at the time just a catch-all term for any kind of sex or sexual act considered non-standard. So basically, if you're not married, right, and having sexual relationships for the sole purpose of procreation.
In a very specific and orthodox way.
In a very specific way, then you're breaking the rules and anything else is deviant and an aberration. And so members of the public started to associate extravagant fashions in general and pointy shoes in particular with alternative or deviant sexuality. Just picture a religious authority saying, and there are also very long, luxurious locks, like those of women. Their shirts are too tight. They're over tight. The tunics are unseemly. It's the end of days.
So we talked about how the Black Death rolled through, killed lots and lots of people. And it was said by clergy that that one of the reasons that the Black Death came through and all of these people were being punished was because of the sexual deviancies, right? Mm-hmm. And these Poulains were a symbol of that. And you can also see why maybe there was a push or an underground push for the Poulains, because it was almost almost symbolic of freedom or that thing that everybody pushes for throughout history at some point or another in these waves of just trying to show that you don't have to conform. This like minor nonconformity thing, but doing it in small ways, I don't know, very symbolic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because people want to be free to arrive at their own definitions of themselves, which I think is an inherently human and noble thing. But then also control over how people are allowed to present themselves is a big deal to authorities throughout history, you know, and everything from haircuts to clothing to food to more. So the church doesn't like this, and they have these different reasons. So they say, yes, it's indicative of sexual proclivities, which are unseemly and ungodly. But if you think about it, there's a good argument that the Poulain could be regarded as phallic. It's a long, tippy shoe, and they're mostly worn by well-to-do young men, and then later just young men in general, who reportedly would stand on street corners and like wiggle them at people. And people started to say, well, there started to be this stereotype where folks would say, if somebody wears Poulains with bells sewn to the end of them, what they're telling you is that they're available for sexual frolics.
Man, I wish that guy that we won't name was here, because I want to ask him whether or not that's where the term bell end came from. I feel like that's
it. Okay. We'll ask him later. We'll ask him after this show. We'll text him. Yes. So like you said, this is something that later historians, especially in the queer community, had looked into, right? At this sort of idea of using fashion as almost another language, right? Mm-hmm. A nonverbal language to convey one's positions, intentions, desires, and aims. That's a brilliant thing that continues today in all sorts of parts of the world. But here's the argument, Matt, here's the argument I thought was kind of the most disingenuous. The church also said that really long Poulains were bad because they stopped people from being able to kneel. So then they stopped people from praying, and priests started calling them Satan's claws because of this. The reason I think that's silly is it makes the assumption that Poulains are an irremovable shoe. That doesn't happen. The closest thing people have to an irremovable shoe is the foot, or the skin of the foot.
Yeah. I mean, some of these boots with like the elaborate stuff you got to do to tighten them and get them on, those are almost, you know, irremovable unless you really want to put some thought and time into it.
Yeah, you're right. That's a time commitment, right? But you see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like they just didn't like stuff that was popular, which is weird because and I say this with full respect, but if you look at the history of the importance that European religious institutions put on who can or cannot wear certain types of uniform or fashion, whether they are lay or clergy, etc., that it tracks to me that they would be very sensitive to changes in fashion, because in a way, they kind of had this conception that everyone should have a rough uniform The king should dress differently from the priest, the pope, or the peasant.
Well, yeah. And speaking of the pope, do you remember when Pope Urban, I believe the fifth, was like, guess what? Can't wear these anymore. Too bad. I know you love them. Don't care. Can't. That's it. I'm done. I'm going back inside to put on my poulains because I'm the pope.
Pope. I call them pope lanes. This is my thing now. It's my thing now. These are pope shoes. It's interesting because he did issue that edict and nobody really listened to him. Nope. They were like, you will take these poulains from my cold, dead toes. So eventually, as this lascivious sexual connotation of the poulain continues and it becomes more a known and accepted thing, the English crown feels like they have to step in because essentially they were saying is like, you know, the longer the toe on a poulain, the more masculine the man. And people didn't like that. Some people didn't like that. They were like, don't judge me by my foot game. And so...
Yeah, well, you know what they say about a guy with a really long poulain.
He doesn't have a job.
Well, or he's... Yeah, he doesn't have a job. No. Wow. But yeah, the... Was it the British crown or the parliament? It was a British authority stepped forward and said, guess what? We are going to ban these now. So the church banned them, and now the secular authority comes through and says, sorry.
Yes, they banned them. Parliament says wearing these types of shoes is now equivalent to public indecency.
Oh.
But only if you're not rich. They say no person under the estate of Lord can wear any gown, jacket, or coat that does not cover the genitals and buttocks.
What?
Also, you can't wear any shoes or boots with pikes, those points, longer than 2 inches, and no tailor can make a short garment or stuffed doublet, and no shoemaker can make, you know, long pointy shoes anymore. It's a law from 1463. They had other stuff to do that day, but they chose to do that.
Well, I mean, I get it. Like, making crotchless doubloons is like, doubloons? Is that not, that's not the right word. Doublet, not a doublet. There's pantaloons.
Breeches, pantaloons.
Breeches. How about greaves? No, those are for shins.
How about tidy ones? Yeah, but like you were saying. Yeah.
I get it. I'm sorry, I just can't get over an edict saying no tailor shall make anything. what was your quote?
No
that
tailor
does not cover the genitals and buttocks.
Yes, yeah, you have, but it's okay if you're the Lord or over. Like the king can do what he wishes with his Australia, but everybody else has to cover it up. And this is the sumptuary law we were talking about earlier. These set out, you know, exactly what you were describing earlier, Matt, a very specific kind of plain length based on one's social class. And it was argued that it was okay for barons and knights to have longer points because they were less susceptible to the sinful things that wearing these shoes would tempt you to do. The only other city that took a stand against this was Paris. They banned them in 1368. But it came and went. You know, that's how fashion is. It's cyclical. And by 1475, the poulain had largely vanished. European footwear under King Henry VIII got really into wide box-toed shoes.
Yeah, it's a real reaction to the poulain there.
Yeah. And then later, England passed laws restricting the width of the shoes.
Of course. You can imagine the craziness that could happen there with the width of shoes. Isn't there a thing where people were going around like trying to stop people in the streets and say, ho, hold on there, sir. Let me take a gander at thine shoes. The width appear to be too much.
Oh, no. Me feet are wide natural-like. We got shoveled feet.
They're old to us. Well, we shall see.
They're old to me. Run. These are his feet. He's got a very short, walking span. He's a very short man with wide feet. So he's kind of like a speed penguin. It's a penguin. It's a penguin they didn't know because they haven't seen penguins yet. And he speaks in a terrible accent.
Oh, excuse me, sir. I wonder, like, it's so funny to me, the concept of modifying shoe fashion to the point where it gets outlawed, but the utility of the fashion change is so anti-escape. Like, it makes it so much more difficult to escape any situation where an authority is attempting to stop you. Weird.
So we hope you enjoyed this story and knowing that there is a very long precedent or a very long standing precedent to those folks at the local Quick Trip, Buford Highway, which, all the way, also shout out to Buford Highway. It's got like the best food in town. Mm-hmm. It is known if you ever get a chance to travel or check it out. Matt, this became a two-parter along the way because we had so much fun exploring this story. We run into some pretty heavy social issues that continue to dog humanity in the modern day. So we want to first off thank you so much for hanging out with these two episodes. And also thanks, of course, to our good pal Noel Brown, who's on adventures, but will be returning. Matt, I want to give you the last word before we go to the credits.
Oh, the last word? Really?
It can be any word you want.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wait. If it's a curse word, we're going to bleep it, though.
Oh, man. Does it have... is it one word? Can it be a phrase? I don't know the rules.
It can be a commencement speech, bro. It's
really?
Yeah, you're the one who did us a favor, so it's all on you.
Well, to everyone out there who's just graduated, I just want to say, listen to Camp Hell and Awakey. Oh, what? Sorry. But seriously, congratulations, grads. And do listen to Camp Hell and Awakey. I hope you do that. No, but hey, the only thing I think, honestly, we missed out on this episode was being able to consult with our friend. Because, Jonathan Strickland, of course.
Damn it.
It's time,
the hell,
gentlemen.
It wasn't a bit. I was telling you the truth.
Noel, you look different.
Thanks. It's not Noel, it's Matt.
Matholomule Frodrick, my old nemesis. Well, Matholomule, you're in for a treat. For welcome to the most cringeworthy segment in all of podcasting. You face the Quister.
Jonathan Strickland.
Is it okay that I'm excited about this?
Now, gentlemen, I have something I have to say first before we get into this. I climbed out of my poutine this morning and into my 17-foot-long poulaine, down the can of Satan Claw, donned my lascivious, ungodly tight shirt, placed my propeller beanie upon my pate, and I made my way to the Ridiculous History Studios, only to discover they are empty. You shall suffer for this.
Uh-oh.
Such great things to show you.
Hey, Quister, what is the crotch area of your breeches? How are they doing?
Oh, my codpiece? Awesome. Yes. Awesome. Yeah, boy, listening to you just sort of whiff your way through medieval terminology was truly the highlight of my week. So glad I came in on this one.
I could feel a disturbance in the force when we decided to call beanies dealy bops. I can feel somewhere out there. So Jonathan Strickland, aka the Quister, longtime listeners know what goes on with our continuing Cold War here on Ridiculous History. But for anyone who might be unfamiliar with this segment, what exactly is about to go down?
Well, I am about to present to the two of you three scenarios. Two of them are real. One of them I made upsies. It is up to the two of you to determine which one is the fake. You have 3 minutes to do so, and you may ask me questions once I finish all three scenarios, but you have to preface it with a phrase of my choosing. You will, for reasons that will soon become clear, understand why I've chosen this phrase. The phrase for this one is, "Soon may the Wellerman come."
Okay.
So you have those. That is a hint to the nature of the three questions. And of course, as always, we will make certain to mark who won and who lost at the end. But that is the gist of it. Matholomew Frodrick, are you prepared?
I am prepared. Let me just make sure I get this right. Soon may the Wellerman come?
Soon may the Wellerman come.
Okay. So it's a statement. Got it. Okay.
Yes. Yes. It's to bring us sugar and tea and rum. But you are so slow on the uptake, Frederick.
I really am.
Where's the Noel person? Where did Noel go? Where's... all right. Well, we'll make do, I suppose. Here we are.
Wow.
Scenario number one. Under the intersection of Clay and Sansom Streets in San Francisco is something odd. The intersection is 5 blocks from the piers at the bay. And yet, under that intersection is the Niantic, a ship from the mid-19th century. It is just one of more than 40 ships buried in San Francisco, but it's the only one that served as the inspiration for the name of the company that made Pokemon Go. Scenario 2. A construction crew in Old Town Alexandria in Virginia found something odd while preparing a construction site. On South Union Street, they found a buried 18th century warship, possibly one used in the American Revolutionary War. The remains were in reasonably good shape, largely, it is believed, because since it was buried, oxygen could not reach it. Scenario 3. In Topeka, Kansas, just south of the Kansas River, you'll find the Topeka Zoo. The zoo was founded in 1933, but underwent an expansion in 1966. During the construction process, crews discovered something truly odd: the remains of an old ship believed to be a small whaling vessel. There were no local records of such a ship, and archaeologists are puzzled as to how it got there. Begin the time.
And the timing begins now. We have 3 minutes, Matt.
Okay. Oh, God. Okay. So, MacGruber! God. Clay Streets in San Francisco. Niantic is the name of the ship. Okay. This is me thinking out loud.
Yeah,
out loud.
There you go. Yeah, we're not asking it.
So, Ben, if we want to ask a question, we say that thing and then we ask
yes,
the quister.
Yes, okay, that's cool. Right, Matt. So, soon may the Wellerman come.
Yes, Mr. Bolin.
So, the third one was Topeka, Kansas.
That's correct.
They've discovered a ship. No one knows how it got there.
Mm-hmm. Just south of the Kansas River.
What was the age of it again?
They had not determined it, according to the source I saw. They suspected it was from the 19th century.
Okay.
So wait. Soon may the Willeman come.
Yes, not Noel.
So you've got sources for these, and one of them is completely makes upsies, and you've just told us you have a source? Are you allowed to lie even further, Quister?
Absolutely.
Crap.
For all you know, I've been lying this whole time. They might be 3 made up phrase stories there, and I would really get you.
Oh, crud.
In the past, in his defense, the Quister has said he will not split hairs and have...
I do not alter tiny details just to make something a lie. So in other words, if the ship's name wasn't Niantic, would that invalidate the first one? Well, I wouldn't go so far as that. So either there is or there is not a ship named Niantic that was buried under San Francisco.
Okay.
So we've got... soon may the Wellerman come.
Yes, Mr. Bolin.
What was scenario 2 again?
Scenario 2 was that in Old Town Alexandria, during the construction process for a hotel at the waterfront, they discovered an American Revolutionary Era warship buried underground.
Okay. I'm going to say, Matt, I'm going to say that I feel like number one is true. I feel like I've heard that story before. Maybe without knowing the Pokemon Go connection, but I feel like I've heard that story before.
Here's the deal. I feel like I've heard it too, but that's what's making it so suspect to me, because it feels like I've heard it.
We have 15 seconds.
I know. Do you and I have to be on the same page? Agree.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
What do you think? If we chose two or three, if we just, let's bet on ourselves for one, between two or three, which is fake?
Oh, man. So Kansas is by the river, he has stated. Alexandria, Virginia, that's where it's a hotel waterfront. I would say three.
Okay. I got your back, man. Let's lock it in. 3, 2, 1. Locked.
Oh, Matholio Frederickson. I'm so glad you're not one of the regular co-hosts. You got it right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, dude.
Oh, man. First timesies.
Listen, you both owe me, all right? It is hard to walk 3 miles in a 17-foot-long pair of poulains.
All right? Yes. But you need people to know your status.
Exactly. I was going to have them carry me in my sedan chair, as is usually the case, but it turns out that sedan's very heavy. It's a Buick, so to be fair. It's
whoa.
So, Jonathan, thank you for coming on the show. We can't break a little bit of kayfabe here, which is we are all on Zoom because it's still pandemic days. The three of us were lucky enough to see each other for a second in the office. We were working on some secret projects that coincided. But I just want to give you a shout out and a thank you for hopping on the Zoom. Maybe a little bit early. We're not going to tell people how long.
Well, he showed up, I think, right at the right time. You and I took a while.
It's technically, I showed up when I was told to show up.
That's true. And we were late. So I was reading your facial expressions, and there was stuff like, because we're very responsive with each other. We've known each other for years. And when we were maybe Jonathan would know this. I cannot imagine the amount of like torture that must have been.
It required a lot of self-control not to hit the unmute, which wouldn't have affected the listeners at all, except for the fact that there would have been long silent pauses in the middle of your recording.
We would have had you ADR all of that.
Or just maybe come in with a line where you say, you guys need to think about what you did and then keep the silence.
I felt like my introduction was essentially that, where I just confronted you with a litany of facts.
I hope you never have to listen to this, Jonathan, because the parts that you missed. Look, Ben, I'm not cut out for this. You and Noel are really good at it, Jonathan. Fantastic. I'm really glad that you guys are helming this show. It is tough to know so much about the ridiculousness of history.
Whoa, you're too kind, Matt. And I hope that you will, of course, I think we all hope that you will return in the future.
I don't.
Okay. All right. The consensus of the show in official... We have a quorum that hopes you will return in the future. And maybe you and Jonathan will meet once again in the field of Quister battle sooner than you think. Matt, one thing that it feels so ridiculous because we hang out all the time, but one thing we like to do when we have folks over on the show is to let the audience know anything that you're working on that they should catch up on when they get a chance. I understand we do another show called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Jonathan, you've been on that as well. Actually, we need to have you back on that because we've got some things coming up where we need your expertise as Jonathan Strickland, not as the Quister.
You know, I make no guarantees which one you get, but I'm happy to jump on.
We really do. We made a whole episode by ourselves about NFTs, and we need you.
So Matt, where can people find some of your projects?
Well, you can find a lot of the shows that I'm officially an EP on right now, but I'm not voicing anything besides stuff they don't want you to know. But I would recommend checking out the second season of Ephemeral, which is a great podcast hosted by Alex Williams. Second season of Strange Arrivals, Camp Hell and Awakey, which is a true crime show. Algorithm's about to come out. There's so many shows coming out right now in our realm. I'd love for you to listen to any and all of them, but don't neglect this one or Stuff They Don't Want You to Know or Tech Stuff. Or what are your other shows, Jonathan? Jonathan's got like 7 shows.
I mean, there's Large Nerdron Collider. There's The Restless Ones. I think I voiced something for Strange Arrivals.
I think you did.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I like to keep my hand in lots of things. Thank you, Matt. You are too kind. Obviously, I am a huge fan of all the work that we've all been doing since before there was an internet, it feels like. So I think any listeners who enjoy this show, you should definitely explore sort of the deeper catalog, because there's a lot of really compelling stuff out there. Some of it is silly, some of it is extremely serious, and some of it seems to try and bridge the gap between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, we hope that you enjoy this show. We hope you enjoy the other shows that we have here in our strange panoply of adventures. Stay tuned. As always, there is more to come on the way. Thanks, of course, to Alex Williams, who composed our track. Thanks to our awesome super producers, Casey Pegram, Andrew Howard, and Max Williams. Jonathan, Matt, again, thanks to you guys. Thanks, of course, to Noel as well. And if you have a story about ridiculous fashion that you'd like us to delve into, please let us know. Head on over to our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians. We can't wait to hear from you. Jonathan, what kind of shoes are you wearing, man?
Well, 17-foot-long Poulains. I actually told you that you don't listen at all, do you?
I'm terrible at improv. All right, that's our show.
Bye!
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.